This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are the dynamic duo Steve Charles of Immix Group and Larry Allen of Allen Federal. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Mark.
No sidekick here. Both are superheroes. Love surrounding myself with brainy people because it makes me seem smart. Tea leaf time, guys. We can assume that a continuing resolution is going to occur, but what's the likelihood of an actual shutdown this time? Steve, start.
Well, my prediction is that we'll get a CR, the day or two before October 1, but I believe the political wrangling among the wings of the Republican Party will probably continue right down to the absolute deadline, in an attempt for each side to make its positions known and save face and all that kind of stuff.
Larry, you and I, a year and a half or more ago, were among those vocal saying the sequestration's going to happen. Nobody's going to stop this. Everybody else was going, you're crazy, you're wrong. am I wrong thinking that there could be a shutdown?
No, I don't think you're wrong, Mark. The prospects for a government shutdown are higher now than they've been any time since 1995, the last time we did have a shutdown. You have, as Steve alluded to, a wing of the House Republican Party that really wants to make a very strong statement, in this case, in opposition to Obamacare. They are tying funding for a CR to defunding Obamacare. And just as Steve said, we're going to go right down to the wire. Anyone who thinks that we're going to have a CR in place before the 29th or 30th of September is dreaming. And it's entirely possible that in this game of fiscal year chicken, we could have a day or two of shutdowns. I still think that likelihood is less than 50%, so I'm slightly more in Steve's camp on that. But I certainly believe that this is a party now in the House that would not mind having a shutdown with the president, certainly over something that they see as important as Obamacare, and what that means for both contractors and the people they are selling to is that you're going to have your FY14 start with a tremendous amount of uncertainty.
Yes, I agree. I mean, it's a game of political chicken, and since it's not a big election year, it's entirely possible that they could shut the government for a day or two, just to make their points. Yeah, but I don't think it will drag on, forever. So, eventually we'll have a CR and we'll be on with business.
Okay, so CR, what kind of length are we talking here? Are we talking about a 5-minute CR, a 90-day CR? Well, that's a game too.
That's a good question. Right now, the proposal that was supposed to be voted on last week in the House would have funded it through the middle of December, would have funded the government through the middle of December, which is kind of a shorter term. But it's
so a 75-day gig?
Right, but here's the thing. It's entirely possible that as we get this wrangling and last-second horse trading over different things having to do with what are we going to fund, how much, are we going to pass a CR that accounts for sequestration levels or not? That's another question. I'm not discounting the possibility that we could have a 48-hour CR at the beginning of the year. Similarly, one that takes you through December 15th, let's not kid ourselves. about the only thing that really has a possibility of having a full year appropriation by that time is DOD. So if you do have a CR that goes through the 15th, on the 16th, almost everybody else is going to be operating under a new CR.
Right, and if we take that December scenario, I mean, December 15th, they come back and they're thinking about, you know, recess right away. So, you know, probably be another CR to get us into January or February, which is generally when these things wrap up and we actually get an appropriation.
When does the debt issue kick in to these discussions?
And certainly that's another factor. I think it's somewhat of a variable moving target. My understanding right now, Mark, is that this is something that's going to come into play sometime during the month of October. So you certainly could have some members of the House faction, again, going for a very short-term CR, the idea being that they will try to tie any debt ceiling increase vote to a furtherance of government funding.
Right. So that's the biggest concern I have, is that we would get a very short-term CR, say to like October 15th, and then everything is tied up because of debt ceiling debate. Hopefully we get a CR through December and we get past the debt ceiling in October and November, and we'll probably, you know, so that things straighten out before the State of the Union message and the president's request for 15 on the first week of February.
Okay, so here's my next question. I have to preface this. If we do not have a budget for FY14, my math tells me that this is the 20th anniversary of the last time we had a budget passed on time, 1994. Okay, so if we have no budget, if we have a CR, if we have the debt coming down the pike, we still have sequestration. What percentage can agencies operate? Who picks the figure?
Well, right, it's a very tactical form of operation to begin with. I mean, I think sequestration is going to be with us for the next little while, particularly for civilian agencies, but DOD certainly is correctly planning to enter FY14 under a sequestration scenario. They're not thrilled about that. And therein lies kind of the issue. It's not so much that we have the government open. We have the government open on a very uncertain basis with not a lot of new things that can technically be done, although ask me about that later. you have very, very little inability to plan. You know, government contractors listening to this show are like, why can't we get our plans together for our federal business for the next fiscal year? Well, because your government customer can't even get its plan together because it doesn't really know what or how much it's going to have.
Right. The thing to remember under a CR is that it only has spending authority for that duration. So if it's 3 months, it's 3 months of the budget. It's at that to spend at
but
that rate.
I thought CRs allowed you to operate at 90% of the previous year's budget. Yes, no?
Depends on the CR.
Okay. So
right. Right.
So if they pass a CR that says you can operate at 10% of last year's.
So some CRs have allowed funds to go at 100% of the previous year's appropriated level. Some more recent ones have taken 10% off of the top, but it really does depend on the specifics of the CR. Hypothetically, you could have one that goes down to 10%, but that's unlikely. The bigger question, I think, this year is going to be, do you have a CR that takes out whatever you would take out from a sequestration up front, or allows full budgeting to go forward and then the sequestration trigger gets pulled in January?
Right, right. That's the tricky little calculation. So some agencies are just prudent, so they'll just operate at or below the Budget Control Act caps, which is what the sequestration levels are. And others will say, oh, they didn't say anything about that, so we'll spend at last year's spend level under the CR, and we'll worry about if we have to do extra holdbacks later.
Good Lord. So it is this the perfect storm? that's rhetorical. So.
Well, Mark, you pointed out that for going on 20 years, we've started our fiscal years with continuing resolutions without full appropriation. I wasn't sure. I was thinking it was 17 or 18, but wow, maybe it is
94 is the last one I can track.
Uh-huh.
So
this is chronic. This is what we live with every year.
So the one constitutionally mandated task Congress has, they can't seem to get it up.
It gets a little later every year.
A little bit later.
It's that must-pass legislation that gets political, and that's what drags it out.
You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. After this break, I am going to ask these gentlemen what the biggest issues confronting contractors are for 2014. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center. Back after this.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio.
I would rather give an ostrich a pedicure than play this.
Your turn with Mike Causey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio. Check out Mike's column, The Federal Report, weekdays at federalnewsradio.com, or sign up to have Mike's daily column delivered directly to your email.
You know, they're probably going to find out in 20 years that carrying one of these in your wallet causes your buttocks to fall off.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm told I'm loud by my executive producer here. Sorry about that.
You're just getting excited.
This is great stuff. Steve, 2014, you got a big issue here.
Sure. Well, this has been brewing now for a few years, and I think it's maturing. Supply chain risk management is now the term, SCRM. Supply chain risk management is now framed out by NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology. It ties into the controls that were established in the world of cyber and cybersecurity. It's a framework that buyers and sellers and integrators and suppliers are all going to have to be mapping their processes to, because the government wants to make sure that it understands what it's buying and where it came from.
And that's key. We need to know that.
Right. And it's a higher standard than the traditional filters that have been in place, like the Trade Agreements Act, because there are so many exceptions to that.
Right. We started to see about 2 years ago now, Mark, in the Defense Authorization Act, specific language on secure supply chain that at the time applied only to DOD, but now it's being expanded out to other agencies, maybe not through legislation, but through practice. For example, this past summer, we saw NASA come out with a supply chain requirement for its NASA SEWP contract. And it's something that's gaining, I think, a lot of traction in certain parts of the government. There's some understanding that you can't, if the deal seems too good to be true, it is. but there's still plenty of opportunity out there to educate government customers and have them understand just exactly what the stakes of the game are here if they're not paying attention to secure supply chains.
So, and what happens in real life is that many times, most often, products are being bought by the government, and we can assure traceability, trackability. Provenance is the new term that NIST uses. You know, where did it come from and who handled it along the way? But what happens so many times is that the government needs something that is, you know, the last version or the prior model or something that's a chip that's no longer being manufactured. And so then trusted supply becomes really important, because are those intermediaries testing? Are they putting forth things that they know where they came from, or did they just go out on Google and find it and ship it on to the government?
Okay, my next question would be, does this cover electronic components for computing devices?
Right. So the legislation that Larry mentioned was drafted around concern about integrated circuits and chips and so on that go into weapon systems. Mm-hmm. But the way the legislation has been drafted, it includes anything with electronic components. And so it can include switches and routers. It can include computers. Anything with electronic components is subject to this new standard of that the government's just now getting around to writing the rules for.
Okay. Does this mean it's going to open the market for those products or narrow the market for those products?
Well, I think for legitimate products that have a secure supply chain, mm-hmm. it's going to open the market for that. It's going to take away some of the opportunities for people that buy things on the gray market. Cautionary tale that I think you and I have talked about before, Mark, and that is people in the government who go out and buy routers on eBay. You're really not sure what you're getting when you're doing that, and the chances that you're getting something that you shouldn't are actually pretty high. Mm-hmm. So going through authorized channels, getting legitimate products from authorized suppliers is going to be increasingly important. Let's not fool ourselves, though. That does mean that those 80% deals, quote unquote, that you thought you were getting aren't really going to be there anymore. But while you may be spending a little bit more in terms of acquisition because you're getting the real stuff, you're also going to hopefully be getting secure and safer solutions that will end up preventing larger disasters than bumping up the top against the top of your acquisition budget.
Right. The problem is, in real life, is that everybody is very cost sensitive right now, whether it's the government buyer or the buyers at the prime contractor system integrators. And so everyone's thinking lowest price technically acceptable, and they set the technical spec for whatever the item is.
Who sets the technical spec?
The buyer, the acquisition person. Okay. So until that person starts saying, oh, this stuff needs to be tested, it opens the gate for the lowest price gray marketer to win the business. And what I'm hearing from folks who are dealing with the kinds of products that are often sourced
elsewhere,
outside the normal OEM channels, mm-hmm. is that until the government starts putting real supply chain risk management requirements in the requirement, the rest of the system will naturally go to the lowest price. And the person who tries to offer something better and do additional testing just won't get the business.
Well, I know some people who do some fairly deep classified work. And part of their work is to disassemble products that come from sources outside the U.S. And in virtually all instances, they're finding spyware embedded in all of these products.
Wow.
You know, your refrigerator may be spying on you at this point. It ain't a light that turns on. It's a camera. I don't understand how they can move that fast in this direction and ignore this type of activity.
Right. So the schema that's being put together around supply chain risk management is a risk managed approach where agencies are to define what is the relative risk for this particular system, this particular product within that system, and then implement acquisition accordingly.
My question remains, who defines relative risk?
Well, and that's a legitimate question, Mark. I had that discussion this past year with some people in the Office of Management and Budget. And my point to them was, you know, everything today rolls downhill to the contractor. So unless you have a particularly on-the-ball contracting officer and a program manager working in sync, really, in the great majority of acquisitions, the people on the acquisition side and the government are assuming that the industry is going to be giving them state of the industry or state of the art solutions. They don't have the technical expertise to really spec out what all those requirements should be. The classic example of that is everybody has to have stuff that's disability access enabled. Well, that's a self-certification in almost every RFP that goes out. It's the same thing here. One of my points back to OMB was, look, if you're going to require this on contractors, that's fine. But there has to be some sort of penalty on the government buyer who doesn't take the time to spec things out properly, or who is trying to actually cut a corner so that there's culpability on the government side – that would drive the assurance of better responses on the industry side.
Right. I mean, there are many layers to this. And so what we are implementing at Immix Group this year is chain of custody validation. So that's the first layer. Can you validate who touched the product from the OEM into the government site? And we can add that without adding a lot of cost. But when we get into this other world where things have to be tested because it's not clear, chain of custody from the manufacturing plant straight on into the government, we're into a whole nother level of complexity and cost.
Zowie. I haven't done this yet, so I'll do it now. You can find Larry at Allen Federal, allenfederal.com. You can find Steve at imixgroup.com, imixgroup.com. You can find both of them on my favorite playground, LinkedIn. Let's take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after this.
Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Too bad you guys aren't here during the breaks because the conversation gets better. But maybe we'll replicate some of that. With the sequestration, but driven by the CR, how much work is going to go through existing contracts because there will technically be no new projects allowed?
That's an excellent point, Mark, and it's one that I've been talking about recently, and that is, look, depending on the government agency you're talking about, particularly civilian agencies, they've been operating under a full year CR for at least this year and perhaps longer than that as well.
Maybe back to 94.
That's right. That's a very long succession of time to operate under a continuing resolution when a continuing resolution doesn't allow you to start any new projects. Well, certainly you have agencies that have new and developing missions, evolving needs. I've been one to think that the definition of what's classified as new is going to become progressively more narrow out of necessity, so that if you have an established contract or if you have something that's going to be a logical follow-on to a project you're already working on, there certainly is going to be a lot of pressure to have a different interpretation of scope, simply because there are projects that need to be addressed in some way. And if you have a CR, you have to get creative about how you do that by not calling it new. Similarly, though, as you pointed out, we have the other side of that is we do continue to operate under sequestration, even with the CR. And I know that particularly in the Department of Defense, they're looking at contracts that are coming out of the gate and holding them at the start of the fiscal year because they don't want to start something that may end up getting shut down due to a sequestration cut in January. Similarly, if there are existing contracts that are coming up for a milestone review, they may get put on a side lane at their milestone review for the same reason. So while there are certainly some opportunities and I think creative ways to identify work as not new, simply having an existing contract itself is not the recipe to automatic success.
Right. You know, it's kind of interesting being on the selling side of the equation here in this ecosystem. You know, we always like to have new things to talk about. We everything is new, right?
No, and you add new companies with some regularity to your suite of partners, Steve.
Right. So you always want to be talking about the new things. And so when I'm training sales teams of these manufacturers, I say new is a bad word. because, you know, for the last 20 years, we've been under CR. So for the whole first quarter, you have to actually position what you have to offer as something that enhances something that is already going on. And the great thing about the government is that you can always go up a layer to something that's more broadly defined. And in that sense, you are offering a better way of doing something in the context of something much larger that's already continuing. And that's the key thing to keep in mind. I'm just giving you what Larry just said, which is, you know, don't call it new, call it doing something better within the context of an activity or a mission that is already underway.
Okay. If you haven't figured this out, let me remind all the listeners at this point. Both Larry Allen and Steve Charles and their respective companies, Allen Federal and Immix Group, offer some excellent training programs. So take a look at the websites. Larry's got a great weekly newsletter. Steve, your company has one of the best blogs in the market, and I'm going to recruit you. Threatened you with this before to teach for us at Government Market Master. But, you know, how much work is going to fall by the wayside if you can't find a vehicle to drive it through?
And I think that's a very good question. Undeniably, there will be work that falls by the wayside for lack of vehicle and for lack of funding. It's a very tricky issue. I mean, we have to realize that this is a government that doesn't merely buy paper and pencils and pens. This is a government that does some pretty cutting-edge research in things like healthcare, in things like technical weapon systems-related research that are important for national security means. We just talked in the last segment about secure supply chain, and cybersecurity is kind of the next backyard over from that. If you're not keeping pace with research on things like cybersecurity, you're putting the country behind a fairly large eight ball because not everybody else is slowing down their spending or their efforts to have cyber attacks either on individuals or organizations in the government.
Right. And to that cyber point, I mean, right now, this year, we have NIST charged with coming up with the cyber framework for the country to address cyber, not just for the federal government, but for the 16 critical infrastructure industries.
Ron has to do all this, does he?
No, it's not. Actually, it's not Ron. I'm sure he's part of it and he can talk to it, but it's really an outreach to industry. So to the cyber point, it's going beyond federal, but we are kind of the center of that world here in Washington. It's a fascinating time for cyber and all the related areas. But back to this thing of how we operate under continuing resolution. You mentioned, do things drop by the wayside? I tend to see them pushing right, you know, in the timeline until the agency actually gets its full appropriation authority. Mm-hmm. Realize they only have a very short window of spending authority, so they can't buy a lot with just 3 months of money. But increasingly, you know, IT is being delivered as a service, all this cloud stuff. And I believe that increasingly companies, even when they're selling infrastructure, are offering it on a usage basis, pay for by the month. And in that environment, then we are actually accommodating this dysfunctional appropriations process because we always have CRs that last for I guess never say always, but typically for at least a month or 6 weeks at the minimum. I don't know about your 2-day CR, Larry. Maybe we'll have one of those, but that wouldn't work for my monthly subscription payment.
Well, a 2-day CR certainly would not be followed by a full year appropriation. It would be followed by another 6-week CR.
Yeah. But offering the government ways to work on things with only, you know, a month or two worth of spending authority is what we all have to do because that's how they're operating now.
I know it's not going to happen, but all of this is the best argument to have a three-year budget cycle, not even a two-year. So every president is guaranteed one budget cycle, no more, per term. Just a thought.
It's a thought, and I think there's some good management principles behind that. I think it's amazing to see what type of efficiencies you would get in government from better management, but it's not political reality.
No.
Yeah, we have a political process for this, and it's a process that just gathers lots of amendments that have anything to do with just don't have things to do with actually funding the government. It's sad.
Yep. We're going to take our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests are Steve Charles, Immix Group, immixgroup.com, and Larry Allen, Allen Federal, AllenFederal.com. Back after these.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's Workforce Perspective on Inside Government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests are Larry Allen of Allen Federal and Steve Charles of Immix Group. And gentlemen, my last topic for what's going to smack you in the face in 2014 goes back to something that's been smacking a lot of companies in the face for a couple of years now, and that's the concept of fraud, waste, and abuse. And judging from your comments when we were off the air, the IGs are playing a somewhat larger or deeper role here. Yes, no, maybe. Larry, start us off.
Sure, Mark. We've seen the inspector generals play an enhanced role for some time now at the GSA in terms of multiple award schedule contracts, as well as in the VA through their own federal supply schedule contracts, to the point where, particularly in the VA, IG representatives are the de facto co-contracting officer. Contracting officers won't make award decisions that don't follow exactly what might be in an IG's pre-award audit report. Interestingly, in my recent discussions with primarily DOD contractors, much the same phenomenon now with the Defense Contract Audit Agency. Defense Contract Audit Agency auditors coming in, making recommendations, making sure that contracting officers are following those recommendations, removing a lot of the contracting officer discretion, and of course, kind of leaning on contracting officers just as their colleagues in GSA and the VA are doing to have them follow along with what they believe to be the proper path. All of this really kind of stands traditional procurement on its end. No one would ever suggest that IGs don't have a role or that DCAA doesn't have a role in government acquisition. I don't think anybody is suggesting that. The role, however, traditionally has been one of an advisor, a reviewer, with the negotiation and award authority left to the warranted contracting officer. What we're seeing now is that's not really the case. That warranted contracting officer won't really sign on the dotted line unless it has hit everything on an auditor's checklist.
Right. It's, it takes me back to, I believe, the IG Act of 74 that established all this. The whole idea was that the IGs would be independent. Right, independent of the executive branch and I guess Congress, just there to see and report, and the contracting officers also through prior law, they are the people with the warrant, they are the people with the actual authority, and so to Larry's point, it just seems to me like we kind of have to go back to basics here in terms of who actually has authority for what. The concern is that especially in times of shrinking resources. It happens after every major war. There's a book called The History of Government Contracting, and it's all about all the changes that happen after every spending spree, right? And so we're in one of those times right now. And so just like there is people cutting corners and coloring outside the lines during the spending spree phase, we have the same kind of activity by the oversight community after the spending spree. And so this is the time where we need to get clarity around where these lines are. It's very frustrating to be a contractor and have folks asking you to do things that actually violate the rules. They might be a good idea. They might result in the government getting a lower price, but it's not the rules. And so we have some strong arm tactics right now where oversight people and some contracting officers are coloring outside the lines in the name of, you know, the national good. And that's just not our system. Our system is based on the rule of law. And so we have to get back to that. It's just, and we always have that challenge, whether it's the spending spree phase or whether it's the extreme oversight clean up after the spending spree hangover time.
It's a little bit of be careful what you ask for if you take Steve's discussion down to the next step, and that is, look, if you have people who are coloring outside the lines, at some point there's going to be a price that you have to pay for that activity. Either a contractor probably will be hung out to dry when the auditor conveniently forgets that that's what they recommended or that that was what was in their audit report, or something blows up in terms of an operational issue during the performance of that contract that wasn't foreseen by the contracting officer or the auditor during the pre-award phase. Those are the types of things that happen. Nothing really gets done improperly without there having to be consequences. Now, it's only a matter of time before those consequences are felt and ultimately could cause larger problems for the government than if they had just done it right the first time, as Steve said.
It's just that the time lags, Larry, that you talk about are measured in years.
Right.
And no joke. I mean, it's 3, 4, 5 years till some of this stuff comes out in the wash. And by then, people have moved on, different jobs, and it's so the immediate effects are often just not considered.
Okay, so here we're facing, if not a perfect storm, certainly one big storm come October 1. So give me your final thoughts. What do you know? Top two things each. What contractors need to look for when that September 30 clock ticks over to October 1?
Now, Mark, my two things fall in the good news, bad news category. The good news is the government's going to be open for business, and there really will be authentic contracting opportunities out there, particularly in things like healthcare IT, regular IT, some areas of professional services. So we don't want to paint a picture that the government's closed for business. The bad news is you talked about storm clouds gathering for FY14, and that's certainly true. Contractors are going to be pursuing that business, hopefully with a healthy dose of Dramamine.
Well, I would just remind everyone that the while the budgets are flat and maybe off in certain segments, it's still a big market, and the people with staying power will be able to stay around. So focus on making sure that you have a business model that's in tune with the times, and what I'm working a lot on is giving the government the option to pay by the month, because that's really all the spending authority they have.
Okay. Well, just to wrap my thought on this, I subscribe to something called Archaeology Magazine. and I was reading the Mayan calendar issue because I kept it so I could read the whole thing. And I'm pretty sure somewhere in that calendar it said something about 2014 and continuing resolutions. So let's watch out. You have been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest, Steve Charles of the IMIX Group, immixgroup.com. Larry Allen of Allen Federal, allenfederal.com. Gentlemen, again, thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be here.
And thank you for listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.